This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Danny Rubenstein is an Israeli journalist who has written the name Yasser Arafat almost every day for the last 28 years. Yet, Rubenstein has remained bewildered by Arafat's enigmatic personality. In fact, Rubenstein has found in his meetings with Arabs, Israelis, and Americans that whether they speak of Arafat with appreciation or disgust, most are perplexed by the phenomenon of Arafat. In the new book, The Mystery of Arafat, Rubenstein examines Arafat's carefully constructed image. Rubenstein says he's focused on image because Arafat's principal role has been to serve as a symbol of the Palestinian people. Danny Rubenstein is a columnist for the Hebrew daily paper Haaretz. He's been covering Arab and Palestinian affairs since 1967. In 1988, he received the Sokolow Prize, Israel's equivalent of the Pulitzer. His previous book, The People of Nowhere, was about the Palestinian vision of homeland. I asked Rubenstein what he finds mysterious or confusing about Arafat.
He doesn't have a private life at all. Since he began his political activity in the 50s, he's all 24 hours a day he dedicates to his people. And he doesn't have any private life. Only recently he was married, but he never had a home. He never had. He never did the usual things that every one of us does. He didn't go to movies, to theater. He didn't watch sport. He didn't listen to music. He didn't do anything besides political activity. It was all his life. And then there were a lot of paradoxical, spots in his behavior. On one hand, he got a success, which is really something, I would say, incredible. He took a bunch of, vagabonds in the 60s, and he crystallized them to a national movement. And he coped with Israel, with us. And now he's negotiating with the government of Israel, with my country, about the partition of sovereignty over the land of what we call Eretz Israel or Palestine, which is really a success. On the other hand, people don't trust him. Arab leaders don't trust him. Sometimes his own people call him a liar, a terrorist. And I'll give you one example. When he first came to Gaza about a year ago, the first Israeli that he met was a rabbi called Moshe Hirsch, who is even not a clown in Israel. He's an ultra-Orthodox Jew who doesn't represent anybody. And he gave him a title of a member of the Palestinian cabinet in charge of Jewish affairs, which is I don't know how to call it. It's not even a joke. But he did it.
Yasser Arafat has been a symbol of the Palestinians and of the Palestinians' statelessness. And although he used to say he was born in Palestine, he was actually born and raised in Cairo, Egypt. How long did he tell people that he was actually born and raised in Palestine?
Up to today, if you'll call his office in Gaza and you'll ask the people there or his spokesman where Arafat was born, they'll tell you that he was born in Jerusalem. Because nativity was one of the major Palestinian arguments in the dispute between the Israelis and the Palestinians. So for a Palestinian symbol, or for Mr. Palestine, the fact that he was not born in Palestine was something very embarrassed.
Why are biographers and journalists confident that he was really born and raised in Egypt?
Because there are all people found all the documents. All the documents of he's born in Cairo, he's going to school there, and he's raising. And you know what? The main fact is that he has, up till now, he has an Egyptian accent. And people can identify his accent for, once he opens his mouth, so you can hear that he's not a Palestinian, that he was born, that he's not native Palestinian, that he was born in Cairo, because he used an Egyptian accent and not a Palestinian accent. And he probably cannot get rid of this accent.
Israeli journalist Danny Rubenstein is my guest. His new book is called The Mystery of Arafat. And he's been writing about Palestinian affairs since the late 1960s. You say that Arafat has tried to blot out his identity as a private person and create a new image for himself. And that image included the army uniform, the revolver at his side, the keffiyeh or headdress, his unshaven face. How important do you think that aspect of his image has been? The physical aspect of that image.
In this case, I think that I'll put it this way. You know that I read hundreds of interviews that were done with him during the 70s and the 80s. You know that almost everyone, every journalist, every politician who met him in the 70s came to him and started to talk to him about, you know, about terrorism, about Palestinian state, about Israel and so on. But then he stopped and said, but I have to ask you something. Why don't you shave? There are tens of answers.
What are some of them?
Because he tried to wipe out his personal, his private image, his answers will be always nationalistic answers. He will never say something like, I have a skin problem, because it's too individual, it's too personal. He would say something like, most of my life I've been in the caves on the mountains, there were no facilities there for shaving and so on. Or another answer that he will give that that he gave those years is that for shaving, it takes you, every man, the average will be 5 minutes a day, and he multiplied it, you know, how long it's I don't know, a couple of hours a week and in a month and so on. And then his conclusion would be that it takes every man about half a year or more that in his life that he spend shaving. And he cannot afford to spend this time, you know, it's a waste of time for him, not for him personally, but for Palestinian people, to spend time shaving and looking nice and spoiling themselves. He doesn't have the time, he cannot afford to do it.
Well, what have the biggest controversies within the PLO been over Arafat's leadership?
I would say the fact that he ran his movement as a one-man show. And people don't like it. People don't like it. Today in Gaza, you know that a few months ago there were some rumors or some complaints in Gaza that there is corruption in the telephone system in his new administration. So he issued an order that from now on he's the only one everybody who need a telephone have to go to Arafat and need his personal signature. So try to imagine that he run, you know, a movement, a country, or a country, you know, in the future they want to establish a state, and he sign for telephone applications. And it's not only telephone; it's all the budget of the movement, of the PLO, all the decisions are taken only by him. And I don't know what will be if one day he will, he will gone.
When he became active in negotiations during the peace process, was there any kind of campaign on the part of the Israeli government to change his image and make him more palatable to Israelis after so many years of being, of his image being the intractable terrorist to Israelis? I mean, that's the image Israelis had of him.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a campaign, but the government, the Labour government, the current government in Israel, tried to convince the people that there is no alternative. Because he's, as I said, it's a one-man show, so we have to talk to him. At the beginning of the talks after Madrid, we talked to his people from the occupied territories, to the delegation, Palestinian delegation from Gaza and from the Western Bank. But they saw that they cannot say and they cannot decide anything. They run for, and they call Arafat every 5 minutes So it was useless. They decided, let's talk to the man who is who got all the power in his hand, all the influence, and he's the only one who take decisions. So what the government did is not really a campaign, but they told the people, listen, we have to talk to the man and write to him, and not to bypass and not to try to play games.
My guest is Israeli journalist Danny Rubenstein, author of the new book, The Mystery of Arafat. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Israeli journalist Danny Rubenstein, author of the new book, The Mystery of Arafat. In his new role as the head of the Palestinian Authority, he's been accused of having an autocratic style and of being very inefficient as an administrator. Would you agree with those criticisms?
Yes, yes, he's very inefficient because he wants to do everything by himself. As I gave you the example of signing the telephone applications, mm-hmm. and you know that about 3 or 4 weeks ago, one friend of mine, a Palestinian, have an appointment with him, and they wait outside his office for 2 hours for the meeting. And then he was quite upset, and when he got into the office, he tried to find out why he was waiting, why it was this delay of 2 hours. And he found out that that Arafat was busy checking all the traffic tickets in Gaza in the last, I would say, months or so, because there were some complaints that the police officers took the money from the fines and didn't give it to the police authority. So Arafat decided to check all the traffic tickets of Gaza. He does everything. He ran the budget, he ran the, you know, it's, as I said, it's one-man show. It was in during the revolution, and it's now during the establishing of the Palestinian bureaucracy and administration. And it's, I would say it's impossible. Maybe for a revolutionary movement, he could do it. But now, I don't know, maybe his time is over.
Well, do you think it is over? Is there a rebellion among his own people against him?
I don't know if it would be a rebellion, but it doesn't go smoothly this way. They need a different person now. At the 60s and 70s, when the main, I would say, target or the main problem for the Palestinian people was to bring their issue to the public opinion in the world, in the Arab states, and so on. He was very, very efficient. But now he doesn't need, for instance, this military uniform. They need a guy with a gray suit, with tie and who knows to run, you know, to create administrations and money and not a guy that was very good in public relations, but not good as a bureaucracy.
Is he still wearing the military uniform?
Yeah, he never. I don't think that he'll never take it out. You know, he'll never. He'll have the uniform. That's his symbol. That's Arafat. It's the uniform. It's the unshaved face. The kafia on his head. Everything represent the movement, Palestine, and so on.
His police are cracking down on Hamas, the militant Islamic fundamentalist group that has been in competition with the PLO. And the Israeli government has, I think, made it clear that it's going to measure his credibility based on his ability to crack down on fundamentalists and to crack down against violence toward Israeli settlers. Is he considered an Israeli pawn now?
For some of his opponents within the Palestinian camp, the answer is yes. Sometimes they call him, like, you know, that Israel has a militia in South Lebanon of, I don't know how to call them, collaborators, or people accuse them of being collaborators. So they said, the Israeli used him, as you said, as a pawn or something, but The accusation, I don't know if a lot of people really agree with it among the Palestinians. According to the polls, he still have a very large support, which reach, I would say, 60-70%. He doesn't have any competition.
What do you think it's been like for Arafat and for other people in the Palestinian Authority to crack down on fellow Muslims, fellow Palestinians, even though the people who they're cracking down against are in opposition to the Palestinian Authority? But still, it's this kind of policing your own, a position that they'd never been in before. They could always attribute the policing and crackdowns and so on to them, to their enemy, to Israel.
Arafat is not a cruel leader. He's not, as I said, Saddam Hussein, and he's not even President Assad. He's much more, I would say, mild or soft Arab leader. I would say something like King Hussein or President Mubarak, who, to a certain extent, respect other people's rights and opposition. And he does it, I think he deals with the Hamas in a very clever and wise way. Because if he would really crash them, he'll got the opposition, you know, will be stronger. He does it in, I don't know how what term to use, in some gentle way, or, you know, relatively speaking. If it, stuff like this, the way he treat them will happen in this country, there'll be here, I don't know, chaos. But according to the Middle Eastern, I would say, values, it's okay he doesn't kill people. He arrests people in some martial courts for short terms. But he will never cross the red line, you know, of being. That's my conclusion. He'll never cross the red line of, you know, being a real despot.
You described Arafat as mild and soft as a leader, and I think that's going to astound a lot of our listeners who think of him as, for years, being the world's most famous terrorist.
Well, you know, there are. I would agree that. That many years he used terrorism, of course, no doubt about it. Although he will never admit it. But you know, I want that the listeners will take it in because, as I say, I compare him to third world leaders, and I compare him to Saddam Hussein or to Muammar Gaddafi of Libya and such leaders. I cannot compare them to, I don't know, to European, Western European or American leaders, because it's not the same social structure.
So tell me what your personal assessment is of Yasser Arafat. Do you trust him? Do you trust him as the representative in the peace process? Do you think he's helping the peace process or holding it back?
He's progressing the peace process right now. About trust, that's very complicated because, you see, personally, I wouldn't trust him. And I think that also the Israeli government and the Arab leaders, they don't trust him. And when they sign an agreement with him, they want to put, you know, barriers and to put conditions and to put control that would make sure that he will keep it. When he doesn't keep his promises or his agreements, is not because he doesn't want to do it, because he cannot do it sometimes. And now all the complications about the new agreement with the Palestinians is because of this, because Israelis and others don't trust him, that he can change his mind, that he can, you know, ignore items that he promised and that he signed. For instance, the problem with the Palestinian covenant that he promised to change it, and he didn't do it. But there are many, many other items.
Did he ever lie to you?
No, I saw him several times, but I have only one time, you know, a very long, I think 5 or 6 hours conversation with him, interview with him. And he didn't lie, but he gave such interpretation of reality, which is ridiculous sometimes. Only recently he said that one of the terrorist activity against Israel was done by the Israeli army as a provocation. Or he even said it not to me, he said it to Rabin, and Rabin really was so upset that that there was an explosion there, and the meeting was canceled. But and he can do such a thing. And when people cannot, he argue all the time. It's not when you interview him, it's not answer question, it's argument all the time. He argue. I, for instance, ask him in my interview with him, why did you support Saddam Hussein? And he looking at me and gave me such a naive look and said, did I support Saddam Hussein? It's not, I didn't support him. And I was so surprised, because it was all the words. So the photograph, you know, the pictures and television show how he hugged Saddam Hussein only a few days before the war, and all of a sudden he denied it and he said I didn't support him at all. I only tried to prevent this catastrophic war and so on. And he started to give some justification of his being in good relation, but first of all he denied it and said it's a lie, I didn't support him and so on. So we argue all the time, and which is very so you ask me if he lies to me. No, but I don't know if it's a lie or not a lie, but he argue all the time, and he tries so polemic. And it's simply you cannot have really a real, you know, interview with him.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Danny Rubenstein is the author of The Mystery of Arafat. Rubenstein is a columnist for the Israeli paper Haaretz. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.